Now, News Talk Radio CJAD 800 presents the CEO Series, insights from top business leaders. Your host is Carl Moore.
Welcome to the CEO Series. I'm Carl Moore from McGill University. The CEO Series takes you inside our capstone MBA class at McGill. Each week, we sit down with some of Canada's, indeed the world's top leaders, to discuss strategy, leadership, and today's pressing business issues. And some of the world's top leaders have spent time with us. Justin Trudeau, Mohammed Yudis Nobel Peace Prize winner, and Joanne Liu, former international president of Doctors Without Borders. This show gives you a thin, well, perhaps not so thin slice of the kind of thoughtful leaders our McGill MBAs are exposed to. Today, I'm delighted to be speaking with Michael Denham, President and CEO of the Business Development Bank of Canada, BDC, headquartered here in Montreal at PVM. Thank you, Michael, for joining us today.
Well, Carl, thanks for having me. It's a great series, and I'm really happy to be part of it.
So tell us about your early years. Where did you grow up, and how did your family influence you?
So I grew up in Toronto. Parents arrived in Canada in just after they got married in the mid-50s. Canada was a land of milk and honey back there, and the plan was to work for a couple of years and go back to England, where they're from. And kind of here we are many, many years later, and my dad's still here. So highly influential. My parents had a real focus on, two things. And again, I'm a baby boomer. And the two things were kind of work hard and to get educated. And that was drummed in me and instilled in me from early days.
You ended up going to down to the States and then the UK. Where did you go to school and what did you study?
So I went to Princeton for my undergrad and then London School of Economics for graduate work. And at Princeton, it was called the Woodrow Wilson School. They changed it since. The Woodrow Wilson School of Public and International Affairs, and then a master's in economics at the LSE.
So did you work between those two degrees, or was it straight from one to the other?
Straight from one to the other. And then I started work at McKinsey when I finished at LSE in 1987.
So did you play hockey at Princeton? Is my memory serving me right?
Yeah, and you and I have had the pleasure to play hockey together. I did play hockey at Princeton. I was I wasn't a first liner, let's put it that way.
But still a great honor to play one of the great hockey schools of the world.
I look good in orange and black.
Well, there we are. What did you want to do growing up? What was your, like in high school, that sort of thing? Did you have a dream that you wanted to be something back then?
Well, not really. I think like a lot of kids, you know, when I was very, very young, like 5, 6, 7, I vacillated between wanting to be an astronaut or wanting to be a hockey player, because we all wanted to be a hockey player and astronaut. I'm sure you did as well. And then I didn't really think much about my career until early days at university. I had one of those pioneering early versions of a kind of psychometric assessment or psychological assessment to determine what professions or what careers your personality lines up best against. And there were two things that really stuck out. There were two career paths that lined up pretty well with my personality. The first was being a clergyman. And the second was going into management consulting. And I was never that religious. So I left one of the two options as out there for me.
So those tests appear, in your case, to have been reasonably accurate.
Right. And I didn't want to overanalyze something that was done many, many years ago. But what those two things have in common, being a clergyman and being a management consultant, is you are in a line of work where you are kind of working on behalf of others and trying to kind of help others improve and become better. And at the essence, that's what being a good management consultant is all about. So they seem a little bit weird when you look at them as two options for the same personality, but they actually do share a lot of similar attributes.
You're listening to the CEO Series. I'm Carl Moore from McGill University, and today I'm speaking with Michael Denham, CEO of BDC. So clearly you're a leader today. When did you first see yourself as a leader? Was it back in high school, or when did you start thinking, maybe I can be a leader?
That's funny. When I was in elementary school, I wasn't so much a leader. I was just bossy. So I was able to kind of refine that bossiness into some leadership skills. But my last year in high school in Toronto, I was kind of head prefect, school captain, whatever word you want to choose, kind of chosen by my peers to represent them. And that was my first real opportunity for formal leadership. And again, it was being at the high school level, but you learn a lot about whether you like to be a leader, whether you're successful, whether others are inclined to kind of rally to things you're focused on. So it was the first real chance I had, and I enjoyed it.
Why did you leave Canada to go to school? I went to school in the States and the UK as well. But so what led you to that decision to go to Princeton, then LSE?
Well, the Princeton one was really an extension of my parents' values, where my dad, especially my father, who still works, by the way, he's 91 and he still goes into his office at York and King downtown Toronto every day. for him, it was one of those things where you do whatever you need to do to make sure you get the best possible educational opportunity. And there are and were fantastic universities in Canada, but we looked at Princeton as in a kind of different league. And he was very encouraging of the idea. And that value kind of passed on to me. So I was given the opportunity and I jumped at it. And the LSE was a bit different. I received a Commonwealth scholarship, so the financial burden went away. And what I was looking for was something different to Princeton. Princeton was fairly rigid, tight educational approach. And the LSE was fairly kind of wide open in the sense you can really pursue your academic interests. And again, back then anyway, the image of the LSE was quite radical, founded by a bunch of Fabian socialists, schooled a lot of the post-colonial leaders in the Commonwealth. In the 60s, it was where the journalists on Fleet Street went to look at kind of campuses on fire and cars being turned over. So I thought that would be a nice compliment to my 4 years at Princeton. But I got there in 1986, and the LSE was actually obsessed with the Big Bang and the financial markets. And all of my LSE friends were focused on getting jobs in investment banks. So it wasn't quite the radical socialist experience that I was looking forward to.
As I recall, one of your sons ended up going to Princeton undergrad as well.
Just graduated.
Did you inspire him to do that? I mean, did you try to talk him into it, or did he more just go, hey, Dad went to Princeton's, kind of opened his eyes to the possibility?
It was more that. And also the same value I passed on to all my kids about taking full advantage of whatever educational opportunities present themselves. And he worked hard and was able to get in. I think because he had such a positive image of the school from my 4 years there, it was pretty high up on his list.
We're speaking with Michael Denham, CEO of the Business Development Bank of Canada. So your first job was McKinsey, and you spent many, many years there. What were the couple of key things you learned from McKinsey that have served you throughout your career now?
Well, I think the first thing, so I started at the age of 23, and I hadn't worked before, really. I hadn't had the type of rigorous education, Carl, that you and your colleagues provide your MBA students. I had a master's in economics, but it was more qualitative than quantitative economics background. So I felt young, frankly, and unprepared. And the one thing it drilled in me for my first couple of years, or two things, I guess, were one, to be deferential and respectful to those around me. A lot of folks come into life as a consultant and assume they have all the answers. I was actually on the opposite end of the spectrum, where I assumed that all the people around me had kind of good intentions, good ideas. And as a result, I think from that, I've been able to tap into the best of people. And then the second thing that really drilled into me was just the need to be self-aware. Because when you're sitting in a client organization, you're, I don't know, at the time, mid-40s or so, and you have some 23-year-old kind of droning on about something, it can be irritating. So I realized that you need to be very self-aware. And in being self-aware, you can see the effect you're having on others. And as a result, you can adapt how you work, what you say, to have your ideas and your thoughts embraced rather than rejected. So it was really, so the two things were self-awareness and an implicit, not deference, but an implicit trust and belief I have in those people around me.
Michael, how long were you at McKinsey for?
I was there for 14 years.
What do you need to become a partner at McKinsey?
Well, I don't think it's, I mean, this was 2001, so a long time ago. McKinsey continues to be a great firm. And you look at the caliber of partners and people they have, and they're really excellent. So I don't think it's changed that much. And it really was all about leadership. And do you show leadership with your clients? Are you helping them find new opportunities and capture those new opportunities? Are you showing leadership internally? Are you creating opportunities for others as a leader to pursue their passions with clients or with intellectual property? Are you viewed as a good day-to-day leader of people to help them kind of grow and develop as professionals? So the common theme was leadership. And in every environment, people have different attributes they tap into. But what was important there, and frankly, in most places, is demonstrated leadership.
We're speaking with Michael Denham, CEO of BDC. What differentiates a Crown Corp like BDC from a more traditional business? That's up next. I'm Carl Moore from McGill University, and you're listening to the CEO Series.
You're listening to the CEO Series with Carl Moore on News Talk Radio, CJAD 800.
Hello again, I'm Carl Moore from McGill University, and you're listening to the CEO Series. We're speaking with Michael Denham, CEO of the Business Development Bank of Canada, headquartered here in Montreal.
In your corporate career sense at Bombardier, BDC, and so on, when do you look at using consultants? Because you've been one, you understand their side of the table. What is your advice for CEOs in terms of when are consultants appropriate to use?
So that's a very good question. Obviously, there are certain parts of business like IT that are all about consultants, right? So that's not your question. You're more focused on kind of strategy and business. Two areas where I've found it useful is number one, where there is a strategic question. It's the first time the organization has to answer that strategic question. And by definition, there's nobody internally that has experience. So for us, for example, a number of years ago, it was all around a pretty basic issue now. It was all around the right way to digitize BDC. And like for every organization, digitization, advanced analytics, artificial intelligence, these certainly back then were new frontiers. So we didn't have any skill set inside. So I knew it would be important to get the best thinking from outside where there was experience. So that was an example. And a second example is, again, depending on some organizations are good at execution, some aren't. And I found it, certain types of implementation challenge, companies where I've been just aren't that good. And bring in place consultants to help just kind of create the focus, provide extra arms and legs, create a sense of urgency and pace can also be very important. So those would be two specific ways that I benefited from getting outside help involved in recent situations.
How and why did you transit from management consulting to Bombardier? What led to that decision?
Well, I've been at McKinsey for 14 years. I had a great time, but I was ready for something new. It was the only real job I'd had, only environment where I worked. So my antennae were tuned, and one of my closest friends was in the search business, and he called me to describe this opportunity at Bombardier. And he basically said, for someone like you, you may think you're ready to become CEO somewhere, but let me tell you something, you're not. And most folks coming out of consulting firms aren't. So you need to kind of cut your teeth a bit in a real corporate environment. So this opportunity, Bombardier was there. It was a senior vice president for strategy, M&A, and international partnerships. And the plan that we were on was I would take this role. Bombardier, this was 2001, was an extremely acquisitive company. And the hope would be there'd be an acquisition that I would be in the middle of that would lead to some sort of operating role. And then over time, I'd develop some operating skills to go alongside my strategy skills. Clearly, this plan, I joined Bombardier 2 weeks before 9/11. And even though it was a long time ago, the company really, I don't think, made any acquisitions of note since then. So the plan changed quite rapidly at a thrilling 4 years. But that was the backdrop to why I decided to leave McKinsey to come to Bombardier and move to Montreal.
You're listening to the CEO Series. I'm Carl Moore from McGill University. And today I'm speaking with Michael Denham, CEO of BDC.
So Paul Tellier was your boss for a number of those years. I co-taught my CEO class with Paul. What are one or two things that Paul taught you as a leader that you took away from working with him?
Well, he taught me a lot. He is probably the best leader I've worked with. And people ask me the leader from whom I've learned the most, it would be him. The first thing that he shared with me is he would kind of categorize people in two categories. You're either a simplifier or a complicator. To me, that's very important to be a simplifier and not to be simplistic. But being simplistic is you take complex issues and you pretend they're simple. A simplifier who is someone who can take complex issues and understand and communicate them in a simple way. So I think that's a real test of communications. That's a real test of synthesis. So that's one thing that I've always tried to do my best to be. Second is he calls things as they are. And a lot of companies have cultures that are based on wishful thinking or rounding up or hope, whatever. And Paul was very clear at just trying to do his best to see things as they are for better or worse. Because when you do that, you can solve the things that are worse. And he was very good at that. And then thirdly, he has a ton of courage. And he was in a very difficult position. As we all were, and he had the courage to tackle shibboleths and make good decisions. And it's often easier just to take the easy path. He showed me the benefit of being courageous and taking the right path.
What attracted you, Michael, to BDC? Why did you want to take on the role of CEO?
So, Carl, after McKinsey and Bombardier, I worked at CGI briefly, Accenture for a while. So I had been working in the kind of the private sector in a consulting or strategy environment, various roles of leadership from 1987 up till 2015. And it was just at a stage where I wanted to do something that had a level of satisfaction that was beyond just improvements within the four walls of a business, and was beyond just success measured through financial or business growth. So I just talked to a lot of people. The current Deputy Minister of Finance, Paul Rochon in Ottawa, was extremely helpful here. And I talked at length with people around, kind of given that, what options would present themselves. I talked a little bit about joining the bureaucracy, if you will, in Ottawa. And I was discouraged from doing that because of just the constraints it would represent. But I was quickly pointed in the direction of a number of crown corporations that again, combined my skills of being a leader of a corporation or business, but in a setting where there was more to be done than just grow and produce good returns. There was more to be done, which was to deliver on the kind of policy mandate that lies at the essence of all these crown corporations. And BDC being available at the time, and also Montreal-based, was a logical place for me.
We're speaking with Michael Denham, CEO of the Business Development Bank of Canada.
It's interesting that I talked to Paul one time about how business is always lecturing government to be more businesslike. And so I asked Paul, because he'd been clerk, ran the government, ran Bombardier and CN. And let me ask you the same question. Because you've been in big business, Bombardier, you've been McKinsey, Accenture. What is it that a BDC can teach business? What is it that we can learn from government, in this case, a Crown Corp?
I would separate BDC and Crown Corps from government. Because even though we have one shareholder, which is the government, again, having spent my whole life in private sector corporations, BDC does not feel dissimilar. We have the same types of disciplines, the same type of stretch, the same type of incentives, same type of compensation. So it feels much more like a business, if you will, than a government department. That said, the one thing that I've learned at BDC, which is something I share with my CEO colleagues, is the importance of purpose. And a BDC, we're a B Corp, and BDC is fundamentally purpose-driven. And our purpose is to kind of help Canadian entrepreneurs. And we do that by giving them access to financing. And with this purpose, it is an incredible source of motivation to our people. And it's an incredible way to kind of sort through what matters versus what doesn't. And then communicate what matters internally in a way to excite people. So I encourage folks to really think about the businesses they're in, the businesses they own, the businesses they lead. And you can't make this stuff up. It needs to be authentic. But what is the purpose of your business? How is that purpose going to help you find success? How's your purpose going to attract and motivate your team? And that, I think, is something that all companies can learn, not just from Crowns, but from B Corps and companies that are fundamentally purpose-driven. Danone is probably the best example, Carl, around the world of a large-scale consumer goods company that kind of gets the importance of purpose and has kind of rewired its DNA with purpose being at the core. And then shareholder, customer, market share success is the result of that.
So what's the purpose of BDC?
So at BDC, Carl, there are three things we do for entrepreneurs. We provide term loans. So these are like 5 to 20 year loans. We can give them more flexibility, more support, more patience than a lot of other sources do. The second thing we do is we BDC Capital, we're an investor. We're actually Canada's largest venture capital investor. And we play that role because there's always been a dearth of venture capital from the private sector in Canada, and supporting the innovation sector is so critical that the government decided to get into VC through us. And then the third thing we do is we offer consulting advisory services to our clients. And it's consulting in bite-sized chunks for relatively small companies. And we focus on helping the leader, the entrepreneur, become a better leader.
We're speaking today with Michael Denham, CEO of the Business Development Bank of Canada. Up next, we'll be discussing the effect of the pandemic on BDC and entrepreneurship here in Canada. I'm Carl Moore from McGill University, and you're listening to the CEO series.
This is the CEO Series with Carl Moore on News Talk Radio, CJAD 800.
Hello again, I'm Carl Moore from McGill University, and you're listening to the CEO Series. We're speaking with Michael Denham, CEO of the Business Development Bank of Canada, headquartered here in Montreal.
So how many employees there and how many clients do you have across the country?
So we have 2,400 employees. Our assets are about $35 billion in size, so about the same size as Laurentian Bank. And we have 70,000 clients across the country. And again, we have offices from kind of St. John's, Newfoundland, right through to Terrace, BC. So in a lot of the, obviously all the big cities, but we have a presence in kind of mid-sized and smaller towns because it's important for us to be close to entrepreneurs.
Earlier this year, you opened BDC Square. What was the idea behind the space and why does it exist?
So our head office is in Place Ville-Marie, and we just completed an extensive renovation of the whole layout. And collaboration is the design feature, as so many other companies have discovered. BDC Square is on the main floor, and it's a reception area, but it's also a gathering area. So we use it internally for kind of training, meetings, et cetera. But what we want to do is have our clients use it for their events as well, because a lot of clients, our clients, don't have kind of space in their factories or space in their offices to kind of gather. So we want to make this to be a very porous, very open, very accessible place for entrepreneurs to gather, to learn from each other, to share, for entrepreneurship to be celebrated. Over time, we'll have a bit of a kind of almost, I don't want to say museum, but there'll be a corner of it that is changes over time that highlights key aspects of entrepreneurship in Canada. So it becomes a real place that the Canadians, Montrealers, Quebecers associate with entrepreneurs and entrepreneurship. And it's a way for us to celebrate how important this part of the economy is.
One of the biggest trends in business these days is digitization. COVID-19 has put it on steroids, if you will. What has BDC been doing about the fact that big and small business alike need digitization?
Internally, we, as all companies had, we invested in making folks mobile to work remotely. And the big test was March the 16th, I think it was 16th or 17th that Monday, where we went from basically everybody working in the office on the Friday to every single BDC employee working at home on the Monday. And it was smooth. It was remarkably, and even though we had thought it would be fine, it was surprisingly smooth. So we've been working incredibly productively with every single BDC employee working out of office since March. And that has a whole host of issues around mental health and wellness that we can get into if you'd like. With respect to other aspects, we have been digitizing how we work with the goal of making ourselves the easiest possible for clients to work with. So an example, we have what we call an express loan. It's on our iPad or iOS environment, so it's on our iPad. And it's allowed for the past couple of years, every single account manager to go sit down with their client in their client's premises and authorize a loan up to $750,000. It may sound basic, but it's actually quite, it's a bit of a first. And BDC's become a bit of a poster child for Apple in its communication with its banking clients around the world around how to take advantage of the iOS environment to be distinctive in terms of how you serve clients. And we're also making our online lending platform so you at your desk on a self-service basis can request a loan. And literally, as we speak, we're implementing the next phase of this, which will make these transactions touchless and almost real-time for a large percentage of folks applying for loans. But again, our goal was not so much to make ourselves productive and take out steps. The starting point is to make our client experience as fast and as smooth and as impressive as possible.
You're listening to the CEO Series. I'm Carl Moore from McGill University. And today I'm speaking with Michael Denham, CEO of BDC. That must have been quite the weekend where you Friday, everybody's at work. And ultimately, you have to decide. I mean, you talk to the board and you do various things, but you had to decide, we're shutting it down. Was it like Saturday morning that just, like, how did that, when did that moment occur?
Yeah, you know, I think it was one of those things where it didn't really feel, I don't think we had a choice. I think the public health situation was deteriorating so rapidly. The direction from the authorities was to basically lock down. And we knew that this was the only way we could do it. And for us, especially given that we're a Crown Corporation, our values, we didn't hesitate a second. to do this. And we felt confident we had the platform in place to pull it off. But there was lots of scrambling for kind of VPN networks, and we're kind of running out of computers and what have you. But the team did a remarkable job and pulled it off very, very smoothly.
So you have this beautiful BDC space downtown.
Which is empty now, by the way.
Yeah, and rightly so. But it's something where do you see BDC evolving in terms of how much do we work from home? How much do we work from the office? What's your sense where that may go to in the next year or two?
You know, we discussed this so much internally. And my view is it's a bit premature to lock into. So the assumption is at some point in time, we're going to get through this. We'll have a vaccine. The public health situation will get back under control. But at that point in time, a lot of us will have worked from home or remotely for 9 months to 12 months, and we've seen how possible and practical it is. Then there is a decision to make, to your point, around what does the workplace look like at that point in time. So personally, and this is a personal view now, I don't like the idea of having an entire company work remotely indefinitely. I think you lose out on culture. What makes work fun, frankly, and fun's important, are all the interactions and the friendships and learning and the collaboration, which you can do remotely, but it's not the same thing. But it also doesn't make sense to get back to the way we worked, which was kind of by and large, people kind of came in 5 days a week. So we're exploring options. We're talking to everybody in BDC to get their views. We don't need to lock into any decisions on this in the near term, so we won't. But this is something that is really is top of mind because people want the simplicity of working remotely. But especially for us, people do want the chance to kind of get back into the office and interact and have fun with their colleagues.
We're speaking with Michael Denham, CEO of the Business Development Bank of Canada. What role has BDC played in helping entrepreneurs weather the pandemic? It's been tough for a lot of businesses. How has BDC been helping?
It's been intense for us since March. And if you kind of go back to March, the first economic response the government had was to recapitalize BDC and EDC so we could lend more. And at the same time, they made some changes to get the banks to lend more as well. So what happened once that was announced, a big surprise, is that tens of thousands of entrepreneurs called us to see if they could arrange for financing. So our online lending platform that I described in the 3 weeks from mid-March to early April got as many requests for loans as we normally do in a full year. Over the course of March, April, May, we issued 14 times more working capital loans, which is what companies need right now, than we typically do. And we were doing all this while working remotely. So it was, we were kind of frontline from day one. And then as more and more government programming was brought to bear, so the CEBA program, the wage subsidy, et cetera, some of the pressure kind of, and as the bank stepped in and injected more credit to the market, the pressure on us subsided. But for March, April, May, probably early June, it was incredibly intense for each and every employee of BDC because we wanted to be as fast as we could and do as much as we can because we realized that entrepreneurs were depending on us.
Are there some industries, like I've interviewed some restaurateurs, that's been particularly hard hit. Which industries are the hardest hit? Are there some industries that have done reasonably well during the pandemic?
A number have. I think technology industries have done very well. I think anything involved in food and food processing have done well. And I think what's happening now as the economy continues to recover is that these types of sectors are recovering, in some cases almost fully. But you do find tourism, hospitality, restaurants, any sector, any companies that require physical proximity in their business models continue to struggle. And frankly, if there is a another round of public health issues in the fall, are going to struggle quite intensely. So it's, I don't want to say kind of tale of two economies because it's not as though every other sector is fine, but a lot of other sectors have bounced back, have a bounce back in their step now, but not these sectors. And I do worry in the event that there's another bout of severe public health issues concern and a potential for at least a partial lockdown.
We're speaking with Michael Denham, CEO of the Business Development Bank of Canada. Up next, we'll talk about work-life integration. I'm Carl Moore from McGill University, and you're listening to the CO Series.
You're listening to the CEO Series with Carl Moore on News Talk Radio, CJAD 800.
Hello again, I'm Carl Moore from McGill University, and you're listening to the CEO Series. We're speaking with Michael Denham, CEO of the Business Development Bank of Canada, headquartered here in Montreal. Michael, with the resurgence of the Black Lives Matter movement, new attention is being paid to the hurdles that face Black entrepreneurs and entrepreneurs of color. How does BDC support those entrepreneurs? How has that changed in the past few months?
So we've been active as part of our mandate for a long time to make sure that all entrepreneurs in the country get access to the resources they need to start their businesses, grow their businesses. But it became clear as Black Lives Matter caused, I think, all of us to really truly and honestly reflect on what we're doing. It became clear to me and to us that we weren't doing enough. So I can happily and proudly sign the Black North Pledge, which committed BDC to do a number of things that we are already active on. At the same time, we are in discussions both on the venture capital side as well as the lending side with others to basically make more accessible financing from BDC and others to help Black entrepreneurs. So in Toronto, there's a group which has emerged from Ryerson's DMZ, Digital Media Zone. It's now, this group is now also being supported by Mars. So we're in discussions with them around a way to get some early stage venture capital brought to bear from BDC to help these entrepreneurs, Black, with their great ideas get going. And then we're talking to a lot of the banks as well around a kind of lending fund. So for more traditional Black entrepreneurs that have that difficulty getting access to what they need through the traditional banking sources, put in place a solution that's more accessible for them to tap into to grow their businesses.
What about Indigenous entrepreneurs? I'm sure that there's something you've tuned into having offices around the country, but has it received a renewed emphasis in the last few years?
It has. And we have a, within BDC, we have one of our business units. It's called the Indigenous Business Unit. And it's a team of almost a dozen people across the country that service and work with Indigenous entrepreneurs. At the same time, we also recognize that's not enough. We need to do more. So we're in the process, so we're in the middle of discussions, negotiations with a group called NACA, which is the National Aboriginal Capital Corporation. And NACA is a group that represents and works with, they call AFIs, Aboriginal Financial Institutions across the country. And what we're trying to put in place is a fund that would flow through NACA to these AFIs to give them more liquidity. And with that liquidity, they can do more with respect to lending to Indigenous entrepreneurs. So that's something that we were very close to completing. We signed a term sheet at NACA's annual event in February. Obviously, lots of other priorities on their side have presented themselves, but I expect we'll translate this term sheet into an actual deal in the weeks ahead, and I think it'll be significant.
You're listening to the CEO Series. I'm Carl Moore from McGill University, and today I'm speaking with Michael Denham, CEO of BDC. BDC is a crown corp. Who's your boss, Michael? Who do you report to?
So we have a board, independent board, and a chair. And our chair is a gentleman who spent his whole career in banking. So he's been a huge asset and resource for me personally and for BDC over the past couple of years. And then the responsible minister for BDC is the Minister for Small Business and International Trade, who is Minister Mary Ng right now. She's an MP from Toronto.
How much of your time is spent reporting in and how much is running the organization?
Very little is spent reporting in. The way it works for BDC is every year, once a year, we submit a corporate plan that kind of lays out our objectives and goals and commitments for the year. We're self-funding like any company. So our net income goes into our balance sheet. We use that to lend more. So we're autonomous operationally. So there's very little reporting in. However, we do engage with the shareholder, with Ottawa, a lot on issues of policy and where are their financing gaps, where are their segments that aren't getting access to what they need, where are some holes in venture capital that have to get filled. So we have ongoing engagement on issues of policy and issues of financial solutions to policy requirements. So it's actually quite interesting for me, but there's very little checking in.
Michael, are you more of an introvert or an extrovert?
Yeah, I think you know what's interesting, Carl. I know you're an expert on this. I think we've all had to ask ourselves that question as to how we felt since March, And I haven't done a lot of socializing or seeing people. And I've actually been fine with that. So I think it's and I think I've asked this before, and I think I'm an introvert who pretends to be an extrovert. And I think what I've seen since March actually confirms that. I'm somewhere, if the introvert's over here and extrovert's over here, I think I'm closer towards this end of the scale, but I can fake it when I have to.
How many people are at home during the lockdown? Is it, how much of the family have been at home during this lockdown?
Our youngest and our middle child have been here since March. You know, the middle child came home from Queens. And then we spent the summer with the elders as well. So we've had all five of us together since late June.
So that's a nice blessing coming out of this, is time that you may not expect it together as a family.
Exactly. It's one of the few blessings, right? And I think a lot of us had the happiness of being able to reconnect with especially our nuclear families. And for us, it's been great because our eldest has been away at boarding school and university now for 6 years. Our middle son's been away at university boarding school for 4 years. We're about to lose our youngest to boarding school. So to have that whole gang back together, it's been really nice.
One of the things I think many of us worked too much in the early days of the pandemic, did you learn to kind of calm down and set boundaries? Did you have to go through that kind of experience?
I did. It was actually overwhelming at first. So I didn't do a very good job with boundaries. I was actually not accustomed and comfortable to dealing with folks through Zoom and WebEx. So, and I tend to sleep very well. I didn't sleep very well for late March and the first part of April. But eventually as we got once we got our plan in place and we knew exactly what we needed to do and we got the capital in place to do that, then it was executing and then I could get back into normal balance. But while we were kind of setting that plan in those crazy, stressful, difficult days of March and April, I didn't have my balance.
What do you do to get away from the stress of it all? Workout? How do you keep in good health physically and mentally?
So I do exercise a lot. We have a Peloton bike here, which has been priceless since this all started. And once the weather got nice and the rules were relaxed, I played a lot of golf and went for hikes outdoors, got away to the country house for a while. I'm an active sports watcher, as you know. So once the Habs came back, that was good. Once the Raptors came back, that was good. But I've always been good balancing things and just kind of turning work off when I'm able to. And I've been able to kind of get back into that mode for the past few months.
How much do you miss being in a game at the Bell Center? Are you really anxious to get back at some point when you can?
Not really. I miss other things. I miss not being able to play hockey. I don't know if you're back in the rink, but I haven't been back in the rink since March. I'm not yet comfortable going to the gym. So I miss the interactions I have at the gym. So those are the things I miss. I'm not a big moviegoer. I don't go to Habs games much anymore. What I miss big time, frankly, is flying and meeting our clients. I typically spend in a month, 40% of my time on the road with my colleagues and with clients. I haven't done that since March. And that's probably the biggest thing I'm missing, because that's how I learn. That's how I get a sense of whether we're doing the best possible work we can do. And I haven't really had that face-to-face type of interaction with our clients since March.
What book are you reading right now, Michael?
Well, the real pick-me-up is called The Deaths of Despair and the Future of Capitalism. You've probably read it. I guess it's a left-leaning book, and it just talks about, it's about the U.S. and the deaths of despair that have been so chronic and unique to the U.S. And what is it about it, and what are some of the solutions? It doesn't quite flat out make the argument for the basic income, but it goes in that direction. And frankly, as a Canadian, you read it and you feel quite proud about many aspects of our social net and social fabric and healthcare system.
This is the CEO Series. Michael, thank you for joining us today. This show is produced by Marie LeBrosse. We'd also like to thank our technical producer, Marco Campagna. Thank you for tuning into the CEO Series. À la prochaine.
For more info and full interviews, go to cjad.com now.